Okay, I'm going to call to order this May 4th, 2015 meeting of the Senate Committee on the Workforce. We have a couple of public hearings, yes, and then a few work sessions. So let's start off with the public hearings, if we could. And so I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2214. Matt, which one is this, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. House Bill 2214 includes Oregon nonprofit corporations as a public employer for the purposes of transferring certain public employees. It came through the House Business and Labor Committee and showed no fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
Okay, thank you. All right, let's have Joe Basler, Stacey Chamberlain, and Craig Campbell all come up, please. So who wants to kick this off? All right, Joe, welcome.
Chair Demo, members of the committee, my name is Joe Basler. I work for Oregon AFSCME. We represent about just over 24,000 members around the state, and I think the reason why we brought this bill forward is at our request. From about the mid-70s to 2013, this was the law. When you, a public employee who is defined as someone who's funded by public funds, gets transferred from a public entity to a nonprofit, then they would be able to keep their wages and benefits and seniority, some of their sick time, and some of their vacation time, and they wouldn't have to go through the same probationary period for one year. We actually have, in my testimony from the House side, it's on the OLIS 1978 AG opinion that sort of walks through how it would work. The statute was amended to exclude certain school districts in the 80s, and the drafting of that, the bill was drafted oddly. So in 2013, when we actually had a bill to include ESDs, it got redrafted, and nonprofits were excluded out. You can listen to the testimony if you want. It's not super exciting, but they didn't even mention that fact. So when it happened, it wasn't part of the original. It wasn't part of a plan in 2013. It was actually just a drafting error. So we've come back to try to put it back in. The only couple of big questions is, what about PERS? What happens with a nonprofit doesn't have PERS, obviously? PERS, is also, it says in the statute, isn't required to cover a nonprofit. So a nonprofit wouldn't have to start paying into PERS or start having any of that rigmarole. But they would have to, for a year, give us a same contribution that they were giving to the employee for that year to allow them to coast down. The idea is that when a public employee gets transferred to a nonprofit to do a public service, that they would have that sort of buffer year to, you know, figure out, frankly, their life and start figuring out, okay, one day I don't wake up, my job gets transferred, and I'm all of a sudden making minimum wage. I've got that year to sort of figure out what I'm going to do. It lends consistency to the clients. It lends consistency to the public service that's being performed. I should mention there are two amendments being proposed because we want to make sure that our friends in the nonprofits don't feel like they're getting overrun. Is that we want to make it very clear that the public employee and the nonprofit can negotiate. I just talked to a legislative council again this morning. The amendments are getting drafted hopefully by this week. I'll send them out to you and make sure we'll be on the old list, but I'll send them out. That the nonprofits and the public employer can negotiate that year and figure out who's going to pay for it, how it's going to work. And then the second amendment, I think Mr. Campbell might mention it, is it doesn't include transfers from nonprofit to nonprofit, only from public employer to a nonprofit. So that's it for the bill. Like I said, it's really just putting the law back to the way it was before 2013. So.
Actually, before you go on, could you, or maybe actually Stacey will, just give us an example of when this kind of thing might have happened. Okay, how's that for an intro?
There you go. Chair Denbrough, members of the committee, my name is Stacey Chamberlain, and I'm the Collective Bargaining Director for AFSCME Council 75, and I am only here to testify really for an example that Joe needed. So in 2008-2009, I actually used the transfer statute in Clatsop County. They were transferring three of their mental health workers to a not-for-profit. In Columbia County to perform that work. We negotiated with the employer on how that transfer would function, but the statute really governed how that worked. I know PERS has been brought up as an issue in that case with regard to this legislation, and in that case, it was just a lump sum that we negotiated what the employer would have paid into PERS for those employees that were going to be transferred. So that is the example I have. We have used it also in Lane County and some other places around the state, but that was the one I was personally involved with.
So again, so does this always come about as in the context of a contracting out of something that's being done? It had been done by state workers, then the decision is let a contract out to a nonprofit.
Yeah, Chair Dembro, members of the committee. Yeah, it's usually, and it's for the most part, it is a small number. From our experience, it's a small number of workers. It's either a mental health, some addiction specialists sort of get transferred out to a nonprofit that thinks the nonprofit can do a better job, more efficient job. And like we said, it's really to help have those folks have a coast down into the new position, and it wouldn't apply. If they were getting paid more at the nonprofit, they wouldn't take a hit. It's only if they're going to get paid significantly less.
Thanks. Craig.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm here on behalf of the Cultural Advocacy Coalition. We are the one of the two amendments that will be coming forward. Essentially, because under sub G of the new bill, you're defining an Oregon nonprofit corporation as a public employer. And so the question is, what happens when you're dealing with nonprofits that are merging, splitting, or doing some other sort of a transfer between them? And it seemed pretty clear that that was not really what the intent of the bill was. And so we're just putting clarifying languages to make sure that it is not addressing exchanges of these sort of programs and employees from one nonprofit to another. And it's really from the state to a nonprofit or everything that's already in the statute.
But other than that, in general, the nonprofit community is supportive of this.
Mr. Chair, I can't speak to the rest of the nonprofit community, but at least those who are in the cultural advocacy world seem to be fine with the way the bill is going, as long as that particular hitch is taken care of.
Thank you. Any questions, colleagues? Yes, Vice Chair Thatcher.
Maybe I just take it off a little bit. You were talking, Joe, about how it was the law at a certain point, and then it was changed, and I didn't catch why there was a change. Was it inadvertently left out of a piece of legislation, or was it purposeful?
Chair Dembro, Senator Thatcher, sorry. It was unintentional. So the statute was written, to be honest, in a paragraph form before, and then when Legislative Council redrafted it to add in ESDs, they put it into a list. And because of, honestly, punctuation, it really made it look like nonprofits were already excluded from the statute because I have no good explanation for why it got screwed up. In fact, we didn't realize a problem until after the legislative session had happened. So it was definitely inadvertent. There was testimony that was inaccurate about what was the truth during the hearings. I've listened to it over and over again to try to figure out how this happened. But it was definitely inadvertent.
And Paul,
yes, Paul.
When was it?
2013 session.
Okay.
And I have forgotten the bill number from 2013. I'll make sure you have it.
Mm-hmm. But it sounds as if there's pretty clear past practice for using this as the method when this situation arose. Is that fair?
So in my understanding, Chair Dembro, is in 1991 when they changed the statute to specifically exclude school districts. The statute said for purposes of transfer included districts and nonprofits. And the concern was from the School Boards Association that it wasn't clear enough that it didn't exclude school districts. And so what they did was they put special districts, comma, not including school districts, comma, and public nonprofits. And so by framing it that way, it was correct. It was just confusing when the Legislative Council in 2013 went to draft the amendment.
Thank you. Yes, Vice Chair.
So when employees have been transferred in the past, they were able to maintain the state, however it's phrased, their previous wage for 12 months, et cetera. And then did that change in practice?
Chair Dembo, Senator Thatcher, yes. Actually, Douglas County actually just contracted out mental health. And that was how we realized that the statute had actually been changed. So they contracted out mental health to a nonprofit, and it sent a considerable ripple to those folks. They thought they were going to have their wages and benefits for a year, and then it found out that they didn't. It was actually dropped off quite a bit.
I see.
So it has happened.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much. Anybody else who wants to speak to this bill? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2214. And we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2664A. Matt?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. House Bill 2664A subjects a university with a governing board or a not-for-profit organization or other entity controlled by a university with a governing board to certain prevailing wage provisions of the Public Contracting Code. It applies prevailing wage provisions of the Public Contracting Code to agreements with private entities to construct, reconstruct, renovate, or paint an improvement on real property owned by the university with a governing board or a not-for-profit that it controls. The measure becomes operative January 1st, 2016, and declares an emergency effective on passage. There was a fiscal impact issued in the House when this came through their committee, although the fiscal impact was indeterminate. I believe what they are... Yes, or at least it's unclear at this point what it would be, which I guess is synonymous. And there is no revenue impact.
Thank you, Matt. Okay, let's have John Molis, Ryan Tribbett, and Kate Newhall, please. Do it in that order.
Yeah. Good afternoon, Chair Dembro, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Molis. I represent the Oregon State Building Trades Council, and thank you for hearing this bill today. A few years ago, some of the universities in our state under the OUS system were looking for different methods of contracting to help meet their needs for buildings on the campuses, and we fully understand that. And we're supportive of public-private partnerships and looking at new ways to build projects in this state. It's obvious that is going to need to happen to address the infrastructure needs, not only here but around the country. But at the time, there was some uncertainty whether some of these projects that were built for the universities would be covered by prevailing wage. So a few years ago, we sat down with the OUS system and crafted a bill and made it clear that if a building was being built on university-owned land, regardless of what the contracting method was, that prevailing wage would apply. And the bill passed out of both chambers and out of all the committees on very strong bipartisan votes. At that same time, the legislature was considering legislation to allow some of the universities to leave the OUS system and be governing board universities. And after our bill was passed, the governing bill came along, and we were assured by all the sponsors that when it passed, there was language in it that would capture the prevailing wage bill that we had just passed, and everything would be fine. I don't think there's any ill intent by anyone. It's just one of those circumstances where different statutes were referenced and cross-referenced and not everything quite matched up. So once we became aware that not all of the bill that we had passed transferred over, we introduced this bill. And we worked with the University of Oregon, Oregon State, Portland State to address any concerns that they had. The University of Oregon had concerns with one of the clauses in the bill regarding to bonding that they thought might have impacted their ability to attract MBE, WV contractors to their projects. And so we agreed to the Dash 1 amendment that was incorporated into the bill. So, again, there's no opposition to the bill. It passed out of the House on a very strong bipartisan vote, and we hope that it will meet your approval. And if you have any questions, I will do my very best to answer them.
Thank you, John. Let's hear from the others.
For the record, Ryan Tribbett with the National Electrical Contractors Association and also the Associated Wall and Ceiling Contractors. Just sort of want to say I agree with everything that Mr. Molis said. I want to just put on the record, though, that working with the big three universities, they've been really great through this whole process. As soon as, I mean, they were the ones who actually brought the conflict or the lack of a conflict amendment that was needed, and that the bill did not, in fact, flow through and apply to them anymore. And they immediately circled around and each wrote individual letters saying that they were going to follow House Bill 2646 from 2013 as if it applied to them until such time that we could come into the session and fix it statutorily. And they've just been right there by standing by their word that whole time. And so I want to make sure that that is acknowledged on the record. On this committee, I was looking at the sort of vote count from last time, and all of you probably remember this issue. You all voted in the affirmative on the previous bill last session, so I hope you continue to do so. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Dembro, for the members of the committee. For the record, excuse me, Kate Newhall, representing the Plumbing Mechanical Contractors Association and the Sheet Metal Contractor Association. And I don't need to repeat anything that's been said before me. I agree completely with everything that Mr. Mollis and Mr. Tribbett said. I think that this is something that just clarifies what, in fact, the original intent of that 2013 legislation was. Happy to be here today supporting it.
Thank you, Kate. Colleagues, before we open up to questions, we haven't heard directly from the University of Oregon for today, but the record shows that they did sign up to speak in favor of this bill on the House side. As someone who was probably as closely involved in Senate Bill 270, which did create the new structure, it was our understanding that this was going to be addressed in conflict amendments, and it was with dismay that I heard that we had a problem. So I'm glad for this opportunity to fix it. Anyone have any questions of the panel? Okay, thank you.
Thank you. If I may,
yes,
Chair Dembro, I was amiss in my testimony in not stating what Mr. Tribbett did, that the universities have been great to work with. In fact, I got an email earlier today from Hans Bernard asking if he thought I needed to be here, and I told him I think we're in good shape and we're going to keep it short and sweet. So thank you very much. They've been great to work with.
Great. Okay, with that short and sweet testimony, we'll close the public hearing. On House Bill 2664, we'll schedule a work session for next Monday. We have four work sessions to go through, colleagues. So I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2213. Matt, you want to remind us what this one does?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2213 makes on-the-job safety issues an employment relations subject to collective bargaining for employees of the Department of Corrections who have direct contact with inmates. There is no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact.
Okay. Colleagues, you remember this one from last week? We had a couple of people from the corrections working in corrections, food service and HVAC, who talked about their need to be included here.
On a motion?
Yes, please.
Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 2213 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Thatcher has moved House Bill 2213 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection to this motion? Seeing none, the motion passes. Anybody want to carry this to the floor? Okay, Vice Chair Thatcher will carry. Okay, I'll close the work session on House Bill 2213. Open a work session on House Bill 2440A. And Matt, this was one of those employment bills, right?
Yes. So thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. House Bill 2440A allows claimants to be eligible for unemployment insurance benefits when they are outside of the local labor market for the purpose of applying for employment that takes place inside the local labor market. Declares an emergency and is effective on passage. There is a minimal fiscal impact, and there was a revenue impact issued for this measure, but it is relatively small, I think, in the world of revenue impacts that we deal with, and so there was no need for it to go on to the Revenue Committee.
Okay. Thank you, Matt.
Motion?
Please.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2440A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Vice Chair Thatcher has moved House Bill 2440A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
I guess I sort of had a question. I know it was mentioned that it was only for applying for a job within Oregon, basically, but we might have to go visit a headquarters that's outside the state, but it doesn't apply to any jobs that might be out of state.
That's correct.
Okay, just wanted to clarify. Thanks.
Okay, seeing no further discussion, is there any objection to this motion? Seeing none, motion passes. And I guess we need a courier for this, too. Anybody have an interest in employment?
Sure.
Okay, Senator Gelzer will carry. With that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 2684.
And it was 2648.
2640A, by the way. 2440A, right. And open a work session on 2684A. Okay, Matt, so what was this one again?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2684A extends to January 2nd, 2026, the exemption that allows retired members of the public employees retirement system to be employed full-time by a public employer as a nursing instructor or as a trainer for the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training without a loss of retirement benefits. There was no fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2684A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Thatcher has moved House Bill 2684A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection to this? Seeing none, the motion passes. I'll carry this one. Close the work session on 2684A and open a work session on House Bill 2716A.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2716A requires contracting agencies to provide as a material condition of public contracts that the contractor remain certified as a disadvantaged minority, women, or emerging small business enterprise during the entire term of the contract if the contract was awarded on the basis of the contractor's certification. It requires contractors to include a similar provision in subcontracts and requires contracting agencies to verify the certification status of the contractor or the subcontractor during the entire term of the contract and provides that the contracting agency may terminate the contract, require the contractor to terminate the subcontract, or pursue remedies for breach of contract if the contractor or subcontractor does not retain certification. The measure makes an exemption for emerging small businesses that no longer qualify because of growth in employees or gross receipts, and provides that the Oregon Business Development Department may independently impose civil penalties up to $5,000 for each violation of the certification requirement if the contracting agency does not impose a civil penalty of its own. The measure becomes operative January 1st, 2016, and declares emergency, making it effective upon passage. There was a fiscal impact issued, however, it was indeterminate, and there was no revenue impact issued.
Thanks, Matt.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2716A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Thatcher has moved House Bill 2716A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion of this one?
Yes.
Yes.
I need to declare a potential conflict of interest as being involved with the public contracting and being certified to the Office of Business Development.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Any further discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection to this motion? Seeing none, the motion carries. Motion passes. I'll carry this one as well. And close the work session on House Bill 2716A.
This is going to be a record.
Colleagues, I really can't see any more that's on our agenda. Let me say that for the next couple of weeks, this is kind of the pattern that we're in. Monday we'll have pretty easy public hearings, and that's when we'll do our work sessions from the previous week. I usually like to leave some time between public hearing and work session if anybody has any issues with the bills. And then the Wednesdays will be, let's say, more interesting. So we can look forward to this Wednesday. So with that, colleagues, we're adjourned for today.